Today's daf is Erechin daf Gimel. We're going to start at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet. Hakol Chayvim B'Tkiat Shofar. So we're continuing in this list of all sorts of cases, right? We ended with the last one we have was everyone's Chayv and Re'iyah, which we had all different possibilities, that maybe it's the Chatzio Eved, the Chatzio Ben Chorin. Then we suggested some other possibilities. Now we're up to a kol chayvim b'tkiat shofar. So everyone's chayv to blow the shofar. Again, we're taking all sorts of mishnayot all over Shas that match the lashon in our mishnah, hakol, marichin, etc., and trying to say what is the word hakol coming to include. Latuye mai, what is tkiat shofar coming to include? Latuye katan shigea l'chinuch. It comes to include a child that already came to the age of chinuch. We've seen this as a continuing theme. Titnan ein ma'agvin. Again, we have a bit of a strange source, just like the aviv lokech lo tefillin was a little bit different. So here, right, again, the structure is they say hakol comes to include something, and they try to bring a proof from a tana'itic source that says that that person is actually chayav, because that supports their claim. Titnan ein ma'agvin etakatam midit ka b'yom tov. It says we don't prevent children, right? It's a sort of, we don't prevent.
Imagine this really enthusiastic child.
Right, so we don't prevent, well, you could actually, because we'll see what it's time at. You don't prevent children from blowing the shofar on Yom Tov, which really means that if on Rosh Hashanah, now Rosh Hashanah you're allowed to blow the shofar, but technically you're really not allowed to because it's Yantiv, but we allow it, Letzorach Mitzvah. What if a kid is just playing with it? Because they are, right? The shofar's around the house, they're excited about blowing the shofar. You don't have to stop him from doing it. There's a bit of a debate about this lashon because it makes it sound like lechatchila they can't do it, and is that true that you really can't do it lechatchila? Is it only ktanim? If it's a gadol, you could. All sorts of implications could be potentially made from this statement. In any case, for our purposes, they use it to say everyone's chayav in tkiat shofar. Here comes the big one: hakol chayavim b'mikra megila. Everyone is obligated in, notice the lashon, mikra megila, reading the megila. Hakol shevin lekrotet hamigilah. Okay, here we're going to bring two sources, not just one isn't enough. They bring the Mishnah that says hakol chayvim b'mikra megillah, and they bring a braita that says everyone's shevin likro et hamigilah. Okay, everyone can read the megillah. Actually, one second, is one a Mishnah? I'm not even sure. I have to check. I flipped it. The first one is a braita, is a tosefta, hakol chayivim b'mikra megillah, and the next one is a mishnah, hakol chayivim l'krot et ha-megillah. La tuye mai, what is this coming to include? La tuye nashim, to include women. Okay, uchid Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, note this is different than all the others. This is not bringing a tana'itic source. This is bringing the words of an amora. They didn't have a tana'itic source that supported it. Da'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'mikra megillah sha'af hen hayu b'oto anes. Okay, here we have Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement that says, women are chayavot b'mikra megillah, exactly as the Mishnah of the Braita said. Why? Because they were also part of the nes. Now there's a whole, the Yerushalmi brings a different version, the af hen hayu b'oto safek, meaning they were also going to be killed. There's a big debate about whether af hen hayu b'oto anes means the women were the movilot, like Esther. Okay, this comes up by Pesach and Dalet Kosot. Which is always the one that's a little tricky because there's no female leader. You can sort of say Miriam, but not really, right? Tosfot brings there the nashim that seduced their husbands under the apple tree and basically continued to have children. Once Paro said no, the men wanted to stop having sex with their wives, and the women saved the community by doing that. And there wasn't one particular woman. By Hanukkah, it comes up with lighting Hanukkah candles because Hanukkah was Yehudit. She's the hero of the story, the heroine. Anyway, here, so the Yerushalmi says, no, it wasn't that they were the Movilot, it was that they were also going to be killed. Lashmi glarogu la'abit. And therefore, they were saved, just like in Pesach, just like in Hanukkah, right? They were also saved, which means they weren't necessarily the leaders, but they were also part of the story. Either which way you read it, what do you have here? It seems very clear from this source that women are chayavot in mikra megillah. What does Rashi say? Shechayavot b'mikra megillah, the first Rashi on Gimel Amud Aleph, ukshevot likrota ulahotzi zcharim yidei chovatan. According to Rashi, they can be motzi men. Now, why don't most, again, there are communities that do this, but the majority of women's readings are for women only, even though there are definitely readings where people hold like Rashi that women can be motzi men. The reason is because if you look at Tosfot, Tosfot quotes the Bahag. Okay, look at Tosfot, Latuye Nashim. It's hard not to go in depth when you get to a topic like this. Shechayavot b'mikra megilah k'sherim likrotu losis charim yedei chavatan lashon kontrus. He quotes Rashi. Aval Bahag lo pasak achi. But the Bahag, which is the Baal Halachot Gedolot, he wrote a book called the Sefer Halachot Gedolot, written in the time of the Gaonim. U'mevi'im ra'ya me'atosefta v'zeh lashonam. And here in the Tosefta, there's a bit of a different version. In other words, it starts, we quote it from the Tosefta, Chol Chayivim Bimim Kram Gilah. But the version of the Tosefta that he quotes says, HaKol Chayivim, and our Tosefta actually says this, HaKol Chayivim Bimim Kram Gilah, and then it lists who's Chayivim, and it doesn't include women. And then it says, right, Tum Tum Androgen is Chayivim, we're going to skip down. And then he says, Nashim, if you look 5 lines from the end of Tosfot, Nashim V'Avadim U'Ketanim P'turim Mikriyat Megillah. The Tosefta there, right, so this is a Tanaitic source, says there, Nashim are Pturot, and it even continues to say, it doesn't quote it, Ve'eim Motzim et HaRabim Yedei Chovatan. So, what do they say? So what does Halachot Gedolot, how does Halachot Gedolot answer this? Or according to Tosfot here, it doesn't exactly say this so clearly, but he says in a Megillah, Halachot Gedolot Tosifu Ela Shechayavim Bishmi'ah. They have to hear the Megillah. They don't have to, they're not chayav to read it, they're chayav to hear. And based on that, he reads the Tosfot and Megillah explains that the way he reads this mission, this Tosefta, or our quoting of it, Hakol Kshirin Likrot Megillah, really means Hakol Kshirin Lishmoat Megillah. Okay, and therefore they're Chayavim Lishmoat Megillah and not Likro. Once their chiyuv is different from men, well, then people say they can't be mostly men, they can be mostly other women. And this is why if you go to a women's reading, some women's readings say the bracha of Mikra Megillah, and some women's readings say Lishmoat Megillah. They have a different version of the bracha, because what were we commanded to do? Lishmo or Likro. And this all comes from here. Again, our sugya, which is interesting, you would say if you're going to hold by something, the Bavli versus the Tosefta, usually you hold by the interpretation of the Bavli. The Bavli seems pretty clear. But the mainstream Psak does not hold that way. Could be it was affected by all sorts of things as to why the mainstream Psak ended up not being that way. But there are people who do mixed readings, and men are, you know, women are mostly men based on this interpretation of our Gemara. Okay. The simple interpretation. Hakol chayavim bezimun. Another interesting topic, okay? Everyone's chayav to do a zimun. La tuye mai. What does this come to include? La tuye nashim v'avadim. Titanya, as it says in a braita, right? Women and avadim. Now, according to this, it sounds again, the simple reading is, they're chayavot. Now, there's a debate about whether women are actually chayav in a zimun or it's reshut for women to do a zimun, and the debate sort of comes from here. If you look at the brayta they used to quote, Titanya nashim mizamnot latzmam, vavadim mizamnim latzmam. Women can do their own zimun, in other words, just a women's zimun, and avadim can do their own zimun, just with avadim, which makes it sound a little bit like what? Well, mizamnot latzmam doesn't sound like they're chayavot. It sounds like it's reshut, and it's very possible that the rabbis didn't obligate a woman. Okay, what does it mean to be chayav bezimun? It means if three people eat together, okay, in this case it would be three women, they'd be chayavot to do a zimun, right? Which you don't generally see that women feel an obligation. There's many cases where women do zimunim, but it's rare that, you know, they'll feel obligated, but it happens that there's debates about whether they're actually obligated or they're not. Some people say that the reason why they didn't obligate them was because many, what did it mean to do a zimun in those days? Not like we do it nowadays, but you would be the one actually saying Berkat HaMazon and you would be motzi everybody else. So they say that one of the reasons given is that women didn't necessarily know the words of Berkat HaMazon. They weren't literate, and therefore the rabbis didn't want to make them obligated, so they made it more reshut. There's also a debate whether zimun is d'oraita or d'rabbanan, so that might also affect whether, you know, if it's d'oraita, maybe you would say women are chayavot. You know, the rabbis can't play around with it so much and say yes or no, even if they can't read so well. So anyway, there's a debate about it.
Well, if they required it, their reading would have gotten better.
Right, exactly. You could say the opposite. The exactly. They'd learn to say Berkat HaMazon if they were chayavot. Exactly. Which then obviously begs the question, you know, nowadays, well, if women can all say Berkat HaMazon, then theoretically maybe they should view themselves as chayavot. There's also a debate. Okay, we'll talk now. I'll continue in a minute and then we'll go back to this. Halkom mitzdarfin lezimun. Everyone can be part of a zimun. So by the way, they say there's a whole thing about whether if a woman, let's say there's three women and two men in the room. So can the men answer? Right, so the nephew of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a book, and in it he quotes his uncle, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who says that yes, men can answer to a zimun, but I've been in places where men aren't comfortable answering to a zimun of women, but it's very clear that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thought that that was fine. Okay, everyone can join a zimun. Here we have something interesting again that doesn't seem to match what we see in reality. La tuye mai, la tuye katan hayodea lemi mevarchim. A katan that knows to who he's blessing, okay, has some basic understanding of what Berkat HaMazon is, he is allowed to join the zimun, meaning, it doesn't mean join, like, answer, it just means if you have two men and a boy under bar mitzvah, that works. To Amar Rav Nachman, as Rav Nachman says, Yodea lemi mevarchim is amnim alav. If you know, then mevarchim alav. So this is really interesting because we don't generally do this. I'm actually going to read you even more interesting in the Shulchan Aruch what it says. So in Siman Kuf Tzadik Ter Varachayim, Si'if Yud, it says, Katan shigia lo'onat ha'pa'otot. Basically, they say it's like around 5 or 6. V'yodea lemi mevarchim is amnim alav u'mitzdaref ben l'shlosha ben l'asara. He can count for a minyan for zimun, not for minyan, but minyan for zimun, or 3 for zimun. Hagah, the Rama adds, though, and this is what the Ashkenazi psak is based on. I don't know about Sephardim if they do this, but I know Ashkenazim don't, based on the Rama. The Yeshomrim de'emet starfino to klal ad she'e ben shloshes le'shana, de'az mechazkina le'kigadol she'e bishte sarot. And what he basically understands this katan to be is a katan that got to 13, but doesn't necessarily have 2 sarot. He doesn't have, right? You need basically simanim, bodily simanim, and the age. And therefore, as soon as he has the age, we can just assume, even if he doesn't have simanim, v'chein nohagim, and he says, v'ein l'shanot. Okay, so it's very clear, don't go against this. You got to wonder why he made this whole push to stop doing it. Interesting. Interesting to know. Okay, there was one other thing I thought to add here. Right. Once we're on the topic of Zimun and women, so Nashim, I'll read you in the Shulchan Aruch in the Nashim. It's in Seif Vav there. Nashim v'avadim uktanim e mezamnin alehen, ava mezamnim la'atzmam. V'lo te'chavua shal nashim v'avadim uktanim mezamnim yachad mishum pritzuta. Mishum pritzuta davadim, ela nashim la'atzmam v'avadim la'atzmam, uvaz shalei zamnu b'shem. Okay, that wasn't what I was looking for, actually. There's a source. Okay, maybe it's not in here. But there's an article, you can look it up. Someone who was like Shana Vav in Lagush, I forgot his name. He wrote an article about there's a whole thing about pritsuta, about women not joining a man's zimun mishum pritsuta. Now, it's actually strange, because what does it mean join? Join obviously means you can answer, anyone can answer, right? If a woman's, just like I said, men can answer to a woman's, women can answer to a man's. The issue is, can they count as part of the three? And somehow, the thinking is that if they're counting as part of the three, that's going to cause pritsuta. I don't know why that would cause pritsuta more than answering, even if there is already a chiyuv. And based on that, he claims that in a family situation, theoretically, if you have 2 men and a woman, that should work and you should be able to do a zimun. I can't remember if he thinks 2 women and a man, but he definitely thinks 2 men and a woman should. I haven't read the article in a while, but it's a good article to read. It's very interesting about, especially families, you know, it happens very often where you have 2 parents and then you have a son who's getting close to bar, you know, even whatever. You know, a son who reaches bar mitzvah and there's only 1, you know, can you do it? It should theoretically work. I don't remember if he makes a distinction between 2 women and a man. I really don't remember, but theoretically, it should work. Because there's no issue of pritsuta in a family environment. Obviously, not everybody, this isn't mainstream stuff, but he does suggest that that's a good reading of the sugya, and he quotes from here in a bracha. Okay. Okay, a little less interesting. Hakovei tamim v'ziva. Okay, now we're getting into tumah tahara. So everyone is metamei ziva. The zav is a man who has a seminal discharge that makes him tamei. All sorts of differences between men's zava and women's zava, right? Women, it's blood, and men, it's not blood. Men, it's a bunch of re'iot. The woman, it has to be a bunch of days. Right? There's all sorts of differences. I'm not going to get into that now. But so now we're going to see, what does it mean? Hakol metamei b'ziva? La tu yemai? What's it coming to include? La tu yetinok ben yomo. Even a 1-year-old baby can be metamei zav. Titanya, how do we know this? From a braita. Ish. It says in the pasuk, okay, I have to look at the pasukim, ish ish ki yezav mibsaro zavota mehu. Ish, matam alomar ish, ish, and as we understand it says ish, but why does it say ish twice? Lirabot tinok ben yom achad, to include a tinok who's only 1 day old. Shematame Beziva, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda learns it. We're going to see two different ways of learning that a katan ben yomo is Metame Zav. One is from the double wording of Ish Ish. Rabbi Yishmael ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broki. He doesn't disagree. He just disagrees with the source. Omer, Enot Tzarich, you don't need that pasuk. Because Harehu Omer, V'hazav et Zavo, L'zachar v'lanakeva. Okay, V'yikra tevav l'megimel. So it says there, it actually starts out with Hadava benidata, which is the female, and Hazav et Zavo, which is the male, L'zachar v'lanakeva. So what does it mean, L'zachar v'lanakeva? L'zachar, kosher zachar, it means any zachar, it doesn't matter your age. Ben katan, ben gadol, and likewise l'nakeva, kosher nakeva, ben katan, ben gadola. So according to him, then what do you do with the double wording of ish ish? Right, the Torah was just, that's just the way people speak, and the Torah was written in the language of the way people speak. Another tumah issue. We're going to see a whole bunch of tumah issues. Everyone can become tameh meit. Latuya katan. Again, even a katan, not obligated mitzvah theoretically, but he can't become tameh meit. Now, salkadat tachamina, you might have thought, ish asher yitma v'lo yitchata. Okay, it would be helpful to read the context here so you understand. This is in Bamibar Yutep, Sukkaf, when it's talking about the Parah Aduma. And it says, ish asher yitma v'lo yitchata, if you become tamei and you don't purify yourself, v'nichrita nefeshahi, now don't get worried, it doesn't mean you're going to die, because otherwise we'll all die, we don't purify ourselves. Mitoch hakahal, why though? Ki et mikdash Hashem timei, meini dalo zorak alav tameihu. We're talking about someone who goes into the mikdash. Remember, we learned all about this. Someone who goes into the mikdash tamei gets karet. So now, the context here is, so that's why it's important to see, it's not just about becoming tamei, it's becoming tamei and going to the mikdash while you're tamei. So now, they're going to darshan this pasuk. Ish, so it sounds like ish in katan lo. It sounds like just an ish and not, right? Ish generally means a grown man, not a katan. Kamash malan, therefore it says, va'ala nefashat asher hayu sham. Okay, so it says now in the pasuk, a few psukim earlier, two psukim earlier, when it's talking about the paraduma, tekes that you do, the ceremony, v'lakach ezo v'taval b'mayim ish tahor v'yizala o'al v'al kol akelim, va'ala nefashot asher hayu sham. It says, on all the nefashot. Those are obviously referring to the impure people. So that includes everybody. Okay. There you have it, the both a child. So now the obvious question is, well, why did it say ish in that pasuk? That's why the context was important. Ela ish lemiute mai, lemiute katam mikaret. That's because that pasuk was referring specifically to the onesh of karet that you're going to get if you go into the mikdash. If a katan goes into the mikdash when he's tamei, he doesn't get karet because katanim are not liable for that kind of, they don't get that kind of punishment for doing something. So the ish there is referring specifically to the punishment, no, not about becoming tamei. Ish tsarua. Okay, now, oh, sorry, I skipped. Hakom etamim b'nigaim. Okay, now we're talking about tsarat. Everyone can become tamei with a nega tsarat. Meaning, okay, again, we're going to say latu yemai, latu ye katan. Also a katan, if he gets a nega tsarat, it's a nega tsarat. You know, you have to deal with it the way you deal with a nega tsarat. So, why do you need a specialty move for this? Sakadat hachamina ish tsarua k'tiv. Ish in katan lo. It says in Perak Yud Gimel of Vayikra, Ish Tzaruah Hu Tamehu 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 Akohen Berosh Nigo. So there it says Ish Tzaruah. So you might think just a gadol, not katan. Kamash Malan. So then they say Ve'ema Hachinami. Really, maybe it is just an Ish and not a katan. So they say no, because it says Adam ki hiye b'or b'sarom mikol makom. Because it says in Vayikra Yugimo Pasuk Bet, in the beginning of that parak, Adam ki hiye b'or b'sarom se'eto sapachar o'baheret, etc. There it says Adam, it doesn't use the word ish. The assumption is Adam means any human, and therefore it would include ktani. So again, we're going to say, what do you need ish for? Ve'ela ish lamali. Lichid etanya, we need it for the following drasha that it says in a bright time. Ish en li ela ish, ish sham minayin. Here we're going to say, right, again, it's always a matter of, does ish exclude the katan or does ish exclude the woman? So you might have thought ish excludes isha, only male, not female. Ish sham minayin. Kishuhu omer vahatzahua. Now that pasuk was pasuk mem dalet. In pasuk mem hey, so pasuk mem dalet says ish tzahua. Pasuk Mem Hei starts off v'hatzarua asher bo anega. Now we already said he was tzarua in the pasuk before. Why do you need to additionally say call him hatzarua? So that must be coming to include harei kan shnayim. It means there's the ish tzarua and then there's a hatzarua. So therefore there must be two types: one male, one female. Im ke matam lomar ish. So again, why does it say only ish? Now this is actually interesting because the second pasuk is where we bring up the tzarua, which includes the female. However, what they're going to say is the context of that second pasuk is going to be the part that only refers to the male, even though it doesn't really make so much sense because that's the pasuk that has the word of the female. But world of drashot, you could kind of do anything. So look what it says about hatzarua. Hatzarua asher bo hanega, bigadav yufrumim, v'rosho yeh parua. Okay, what happens? His clothes are to be torn and his hair is to be disheveled, you know, which really means that they let it grow. Okay, so now, what do they say here? Mata malomar ish li'inyan shel mata. What they use the ish is in Pasuk Mem Dalet is to teach you about the context of Pasuk Mem Hei only refers to males, because ish poreo porem ve'ena isha poradu poremet. Only they tear the clothes and let his hair grow wild of a man, but the isha were not porat. Again, this goes back to hair covering. You know, either it means to uncover her hair or it means to let her hair be disheveled. We don't allow that to happen, and we don't tear her clothing. That's always for tznuyu purposes. We saw it with makot. We saw it in other contexts because right when they go to punish, they would tear their clothing, but we don't, or is it also when they did stila? Forget, but we don't do that for a woman because it's not going to be tznuyu. Her body will be revealed. Here's a really interesting one. Hakol ro'in et hanigayim. How did nigayim work? It's not just you have tzara'at, you have to be declared a mitzora. Who declares that? A kohen. Okay, so hakol ro'in et hanigayim. It's not everyone, it's obviously only kohanim. Hakol k'sheirin lirot et hanigayim. This is like by Megillah where they quoted two sources. Okay, one is hakol ro'in and hakol k'sheirin lirot et hanigayim. Basically means the same thing. La tu yemai, what does this come to include? La tu ye she'ino baki bahenu b'shmotehen. Wow, really strange. If you have a kohen who doesn't know nigaim so well and doesn't know how to call them, he can still declare you a mitzora. That seems crazy, right? The whole point of the Torah is saying you have the kohen is because the kohen is the expert. What happened? In the time of the end of Bayit Sheni, for sure, the kohenim were not so great necessarily. They didn't really know halachot very well, and therefore, or maybe the rabbis also didn't view them. Remember, it was the tzdukim were often the kohanim, and the rabbis were the prushim, and you know they already had a bit of an attitude toward the stuki kohanim. And they say here, even a kohen she'eino baki b'hanu b'shmotehen. Well, you know the Torah says the kohen does it, so he calls them. Now this is very odd. So now they say, v'hamarmar eino baki b'hanu b'shmotehen eino etanagim. But don't we have a statement that says he can't declare it a negah if he doesn't know the laws? Which makes a lot of sense. So amravina lo kasha ha demizbor leva savar ha demizbor leva lo savar. The assumption, I didn't say this earlier because I figured let's read it inside, but the assumption is when we were saying he doesn't know, he's not baki, the assumption is that what do? We bring a chacham, he stands alongside the kohen, and he explains to the kohen, this is a nega, you can now declare it a nega. It's such a crazy thing, right? You have this situation where the rabbi knows everything, or the knowledgeable Talmud scholar knows the laws, or the knowledgeable tzara'at expert, maybe a doctor, and he has to tell this Joe Schmo, you know, who happens to be a priest, but doesn't really know very much. He tells him, oh, by the way, you can call this a nega, and then the Kohen does the technical work of saying this is a nega. So basically, what's the distinction? One source says he can't do it if he's not baki, and one source says he can't. So one is in the case where misavre levasavar, he explains it to him, the chacham explains, and then the guy gets it, and the Kohen says it. There's some cases where he might explain to the guy, but the Kohen doesn't really understand, and he might say the wrong thing, or he does it on his own, and you know, then it doesn't work. It has to be that he's really kind of saying exactly what the Chacham told him to say. Okay, a very strange scenario, right, that you can imagine. That, Hakok sherin l'kadesh. Everyone can mix the water with the ashes, right? You take the mayim chayim, the live water, with the ashes of the paraduma, and you mix them together. Anyone can do this. So latu yemai, it's going to depend on who you are. L'Rabbi Yehuda latu ye katan. Rabbi Yehuda holds it includes a katan. U'l'Rabbanan latu ye isha. Here we have our two that we keep adding. Sometimes katan, sometimes isha. In this case, we have a debate: is it the isha? Is it the katan? How do we know there's a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? Ditnan, as it says in the Mishnah, Hakol sherin mekadesh chutz mi cheresh otev katan. Everyone except a katan, which means yes, a woman. Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda machshir b'katan, posel b'isha b'androgynous. Okay, he says katan, yes, not isha. He says the exact opposite is chachamim. So depending on who you are, would be which one you add. Hakok sherin lahazot. Okay, everyone is allowed to sprinkle the paraduma waters. La tuye mai, la tuye alreho. This includes someone who's not circumcised. Now Rashi points out, what does it mean he's not circumcised? Rashi says there's two ways you cannot be circumcised. Obviously, we're only talking about a Jew who's uncircumcised. It's two reasons. One is you on purpose decided not to circumcise, your father didn't circumcise you and you decided not to fix it. Or one could be, as Rashi says, meitu achiv machmat mila. If your brothers, two brothers died after doing a brit milah, we don't have the third son or any subsequent sons do brit milah because we're worried they're going to die. And therefore, Rashi says, it's only someone who's in Arel beheter, right, that he has a heter to be in Arel, not someone who didn't do it on purpose. But there's a debate about that point, whether this is the only thing the Gemara is referring to. Anyway, in Arel, can sprinkle, uchid Rabbi Elazar, damar Rabbi Elazar, Arel shi'iza hazatok shira. Okay, it works. Hakol shochatin, if you remember, this appeared in two different Mishnayot in the beginning of Chulin. Hakol shochatin latu yemai. So both times it's mentioned. What does it come to include? It doesn't say twice here, but you'll see in a second they're going to say one this and one that. It's obviously they're talking about both references. Chad latu yekuti. Those are the people who lived outside of Israel, right? That when the Assyrians did the first galut of Yisrael, they sent the Jews. Right, their whole thing was mix up, take people, displacement, right? Dislocate people and put them in different places. The best way to do galut. So they brought people to Eretz Israel. They're otherwise known as the Shomronim because they lived in Shomron. And what happened? The lions started attacking them. They became, they found a Kohen, apropos our discussion. They found a Kohen who taught them the halachot. Right? You see how things change, right? Then the Kohenim were the ones who taught the halachot, which makes sense that the Torah would say they're the ones, as opposed to in the time of the rabbis where the Kohenim no longer were the ones who knew all the halachot. And then he teaches them the laws. And then they keep the laws, but there's a whole debate among the rabbis. Are they called Gerei Arayot? They were forced, it was forced conversion. They don't really believe in God. Or are they Gerei Emet? Do they really come to it out of truth? In any case, they're known that there's certain things they're makpid on, there's certain things there aren't. Obviously, Shlita is one of them, and that's why even a Kuti Shlita is good. V'chad alatui Yisrael Mumar. Okay, what's Yisrael Mumar? That's a Jew who stops being religious. Okay, stops keeping halachot. Why can you accept a Shlita? So most of the freshmen explain that we're talking about, there's two different types of mumarim. There's mumar, they're called ochel nebelot, right? He eats treif. Lahachis, bedafka, okay? On purpose, he really doesn't like religion at all. That's not what we're referring to. We're referring to someone who's called a mumar ochel nebelot leteavon. He eats non-kosher because he's hungry, because it's cheaper, because it's easier to find, right? You all know, you go to chutzlar, it's not so easy to find kosher meat anywhere, depending on where you're living, but... So anyway, he says, a Yisrael Mumar. Now, why would Yisrael Mumar be trusted with a Shechita? So this is based on this assumption that we've seen many times. Lo shavik inish isura va'achel hetera. If it's easy for you, what does this guy do? He does it because he's hungry and there's no kosher meat in front of him. But if he has the option, he's already shechting. We assume he's going to do it in the proper way. He's not going to duck and mess up the Shechita. Once he's doing it, it's not a big difference to shecht kosher and shecht not kosher, and therefore, at least that's the assumption of this, and therefore the assumption is he would shecht kosher and you can eat a shechita. Okay, more interesting cases. Hakol ma'alin le'eretz Yisrael. Ah, very famous sugya from Ketubot, where you can force family members to move to Israel. Okay, I don't know if anyone's experienced this, I'm sure people have, that, you know, some family members want to, some don't. According to the Mishnah, sounds very simple and easy, not the easiest thing to actually do, but you can actually force your family to come to Israel. And it seems even the woman, even the man, right? In other words, it's not just, oh, the man can force the woman to come, but the woman can force the man to come. What's this coming to include? And this becomes a little strange. La tuya avadin. What does it mean, avadim? What kind of avadim? We never know when they say avadim. Do they mean Eved Kanani? Do they mean Eved Ivri? So, all different interpretations here. Let's go with Eved Kanani. Rashi says, what does it mean, avadim? He says that if you have an Eved Kanani, Mahul, who already had a Brit Milah, and he wants to sell him, V'rotzeh ha'eved shaloyim kerenu Arab ela be'eretz Yisrael, and the Eved says, listen, you're going to sell me, and I'm going to become a Jew now. Well, I only want to be a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. So sell me to someone in Eretz Yisrael. They can force him to sell him there. That's Rashi. The Rambam says it actually means that the Eved can force the family to move to Eretz Yisrael. Very interesting. Other interpretation, it's actually interesting. Rashi and Ketubot there, this is one of those proofs, I've said this before, that Rashi is not consistent outside of Masechto generally. Say one thing in one place, and so Rashi and Ketubot there explains it's actually an Eved Ivri, and that the issue is that the Eved Ivri, and it's not the Eved can force, it's that the master can force an Eved Ivri, even though an Eved Ivri is only your Eved for a few years, right? He goes free after 6 years. He can force an Eved Ivri to go to Eretz Yisrael if he's moving his whole family. Okay? So all different interpretations of what this means. Uleman detane avadim behedya, but the one who says the avadim is mentioned there explicitly in the Mishnah, which goes back to our Mishnah, right? They said, what's the call coming to include? Already says that. So it can't be coming to include that. So latuye maya must be coming to include something else. Here's also interesting. Latuye minaveha yafe lenaveha ha'a, right? Anyone who made aliyah can potentially understand this, not always, but you know, sometimes you move from a really nice house, right? You can still force your family to, you know, I was thinking in Israel, they say when you someone's job, you make it worse for them. It's called hara'at na'im. You make the tana'im worse. You know, you can basically force your family to move to Israel, even if you know you're going to live in a smaller house in poorer conditions. You can still do that. That's what hakol is coming to include. Here, it's interesting, because then hakol doesn't mean a group of people. It means the details of the situation. Ve'ein hakol motim, but you're not allowed to force people to leave Israel. So what's that coming to? La'tuye? La'tuye evet shabarach michutz la'aretz la'aretz. This is an Eved that ran away from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. He runs away from you in Eved Kanani, and then you can't force him to come back to be your Eved once he goes to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it's a good tactic. If an Eved wants to leave, he should go to Eretz Yisrael, and then he'll be safe. Hakol ma'alin liYerushalayim, same type thing, okay? Just like you can force someone to move to Israel, if you're living in Israel, you can force someone to move to Yerushalayim. Latuye, what's it coming to include? Minavaha yafala navaha ra'ah. Again, it means if you're going to live in some little teeny dira on the rova, you know, you can still force your family to do that. Ve'ena kol motzi'in, latuye mai, but you can't force someone to leave. What does that mean? Again, latuye minavaha ra'ah navaha yafa. Even if you're going to upgrade and go to a nicer house, right, you can't force them to do that. It's very interesting that they get into these issues of nicer, more comfortable, you know, all those issues. Okay. Now, that's the end of Hakol, okay? Now we're going to bring a whole slew of, since we talked about these Hakol, now we're going to bring all these sources where it says Hakol Chayavim be something, and then it says Kohanim Levim v'Yisraelim. Now, each time we're going to have to say, what? Okay, I'll give you the first example. Hakol Chayavim b'Sukkah. What would you have thought? Kohanim Levim and Yisraelim, one of them, one group category isn't included, so they're going to have to say, that's obvious, what's the chidush? And each time they're going to come up with a creative interpretation of what you might have thought. Okay, you'll find them kind of, I think I find them kind of fascinating, the thinking of what you might have thought. Again, the whole thing is, why would you bother saying this again? You could simply say the Mishnah is just kind of spelling everything out. Maybe you could say there really is no chidush, but the Gemara always assumes that the Mishnah is saying it, there must be a chidush. Hakol chayavim b'sukkah, kohanim levim v'yisraelim. Okay, now we're not talking about, we're just talking about males, over the age of 13, right, in these mitzvot. We're not talking about all the extras, the ketanim, the nashim. Because it says exactly what they're coming to include. So, pshita, isn't that obvious? Ihani lo mechayve, man mechayve. If these guys aren't chayav, who else would be chayav in sukkah? In other words, obviously, konim levim in Yisraeli. So, and this is going to be the answer of most of them. I can't remember if in all of them, but kohanim itzri chale. You needed it for the kohanim. Why? Interesting theory. Sal kadat hachamina, you might have thought. Ho'il uktiv ubisuko teshvu. Says you have to sit in the sukkah. Ve'amarmar, and it was said about this line, very famous line, teshvu shivat yamim ke'en tadur. Ma dira ish v'ishto, af sukkah ish v'ishto. Okay, you're supposed to live the way you live during the year. Teshvu ke'en tadur. What's dira? How do you live in a dira? Ish v'ishto. You live husband and wife together. Af sukkah, ish v'ishto. Likewise, in the sukkah, you're supposed to live man and wife together. Now, what would be the issue for kohanim? Well, what are the kohanim doing on the regel? Working in the mikdash. What's the issue with working in the mikdash? If you have some discharge, you know, you have keri, which could happen, right, when you're having sex, what do you have to do? You have to go to the mikveh in the morning. And you're tamei that day. You're tful yom. You can't do the avoda in the mikdash. So, hani kohanim ho'il ubunei avoda ninu, lo lichayvu. Maybe since they have to do avoda, they're not allowed to sleep with their wives, they actually can't be mekayim in the midst of sukkah because they're not allowed teshvu ke'en taduru, because they can't sleep with their wives. very interesting theory. So you might have thought that you won't be chayav. First of all, I saw some questions asked about this. So are you going to say for the same reason an avel is patur from sukkah because of that reason? Because he can't sleep with his wife? You know, someone whose wife is a nida, theoretically, you could ask. You know, it seems a little strange. But kamash malan, this comes to teach you, nihi diptire b'shat avoda, b'lo shat avoda chiyuve mechayve. Also a bit of a strange answer. They might be p'tuim b'shat avoda from sukkah because they're working and because they can't be with their wives then, but below shat avodah, even though it's a strange answer, because below shat avodah, meaning at nighttime, they are chayav to go in the sukkah, that still doesn't really answer the Baal Keri issue, so it's a little strange. But what do they bring an example of another case that's like that? Midi dehavi ahochei drachim, just like people who go on it, who are, you know, traveling during the day. Tamamar, hochei drachim bayom p'turim in a sukkah. Hochei drachim bayom, if you're traveling during the day, but not at nighttime. So, p'turim in asukah bayom, v'chayavim balayla. So here they use a precedent. There's a case where we see where they distinguish day and night. We'll say the same thing with the kohanim. They're patur from sukkah during the day, but they're chayav at night. Again, the answer doesn't really answer the question, because still they're not allowed to sleep with their wives at night. But in general, and this, by the way, yesterday we suggested that it was very likely the women weren't sleeping in the sukkah at all. So it seems strange that all of a sudden we're assuming the women are in the sukkah. Again, they have to come up with a creative interpretation to explain why kohanim, so you could say it's a little bit imaginative. Hakol chayavim b'tzitzit. Okay, this is also strange. Kohanim levim b'yisraelim. Pshita. So again, kohanim eats drichale. Another interesting creative interpretation. Salkadat hachamina, you might have thought, oh, iluchtiv, lo tilbash shatnez, right? The pasuk says, don't wear shatnez. And the next pasuk says, gdilim ta'aselecha, right? You're supposed to make the tzitzit al arba k'nafok sutcha asher t'chaseba. So what might you have thought? Now, we always learn the juxtaposition is to teach you, right, that tzitzit can be made of shatnez, linen and wool together. But here's another thing you might have thought from the juxtaposition. Mandilo ishtere kilayim legabe v'levisha hu demachayev mitzvah tzitzit. You're only chayav in the next mitzvah of tzitzit if you're chayav in the previous mitzvah, which is you can't wear shatnez. What does it have to do with kohanim? Hani kohanim hu il v'ishtere kilayim legabayhu. Kohanim, the big day kohen, if you remember, the avnet was made of tolat shani, v'shesh mazar, and tchelet argaman, tolat shani. Tchelet argaman, shani, those are all wool. Shesh is known as flat, is flax, is linen. So, they say the avnet of the kohen was made of kilayim, and therefore, since kohanim are not part of the isra of kilayim, because they're allowed to wear kilayim in their big day kohen, you might have thought lo l'chaibu b'tzitzit. Kamash malan, nihidi ishtari, this is the same answer as the previous one, nihidi ishtari b'idan avodah, below idan avodah, lo ishtari. They are part of the shatnez iser, just not while they're doing the avoda. While they're doing the avoda, they're allowed to wear the avnet that has shatnez. But otherwise, they're not, and therefore they're included in tzitzit, and that's what it's coming to teach you. Hakol chayavim b'tfilin. Okay, you notice there's a parallelism between all these cases and the previous cases, right? Well, the previous cases also was hakol, you know, we had sukkah, tfilin, tzitzit. Hakol chayvim b'tfilin, kohanim levim b'yisraelim. Pshita, again, isn't that obvious? Kohanim itzdiri chale, why kohanim? Salkadat hachamina ho'il uchtiv ukshartam le'ot al yadecha v'ayulat ha'tafot ben enecha. Because it says you have to tie it on your hand and between your eyes, meaning on your head. Kol di'ite b'mitzvah di'yad, ite b'mitzvah di'rosh, sorry, your arm, not your hand. Anyone who's chayv in the mitzvah of tfilin shel yad is chayv in the mitzvah of tfilin shel rosh. And anyone, the obvious is, anyone who's not chayav in one is not going to be chayav in the other. What does this have to do with kohanim? V'hane kohanim ho'il v'litnehu b'mitzvah diyad. They can't wear tefillin shel yad. Why not? Dichtiv, it says, about the kohanim's clothes, yilbash al besaro. They have to wear it on their flesh. Meaning, shelo yehei davar chotzeitz beino b'im saro. There can't be any separation between the big day kuna and their bodies. And therefore, they can't wear tefillin shel yad. We're going to talk in a minute why the tefillin shel yad can't go over their clothes. Okay, we'll get to that. But the assumption is the big day kohuna have to be directly on the body, and the tefillin has to be directly on the body. So they can't wear the big day kohuna if they're wearing tefillin underneath. Okay, so therefore, what might you have thought? I'll get back to why the tefillin has to be directly on the body. But let's just continue the logic. Therefore, you might have thought, Emba mimitzvah derosh nami lo lichaibu. So if they can't wear tefillin shel yad, maybe they also don't need to wear tefillin shel rosh. Therefore, it tells you, Akol chayavim, b'tfilin, even kohanim, kamash malan de lo ma'ak ba'adadeh. It teaches you that they're not ma'akev. You can wear tefillin shel rosh and not tefillin shel yad. Kititznan, Tefillah shel yad ena ma'akevet shel rosh v'shel rosh ena ma'akevet shel yad. And here we bring a Mishnah that proves that they're not ma'akev one the other. Right, we learned that. I assume it's in Menachot. Okay. Now, why does it have to be directly on your body? So, two potential reasons given. The Rosh says it says al yadecha, meaning without a chatzitza. The Rashba and others say v'hayu lecha la'ot. It has to be for you la'ot, meaning it has to be on your body, the lecha v'lo la'achirin. Not for other people, and they learn that means it has to be inward, not outward. That means on your body directly. That's your way of seeing it, as opposed to, you could say, maybe on top of the clothes would be for everyone else to see, but no, it's really for you to see. Okay, so now we say, but wait a minute. That assumes that they can wear tefillin shel rosh. But rosh nami k'tiva, samtam etznefet al rosho. But don't they wear this turban on their heads, right, this type of hat? Isn't that show that then they can't wear anything? How could they do the tefillin shel rosh? Tana, it says in a braita, sa'aro hayanir ed ben tzitzlam etznefet. If you remember, he had a head plate that said Kodesh LaHashem on it, the Kohen Gadol, and he had the mitznefet. So now they say, shasham meniach tefillin, right? They would put the tefillin in between the mitznefet and the seats. Now, by the way, that's the Kohen Gadol. But the regular Kohen, who also had a hat, the assumption is, if the Kohen Gadol had his seats and the mitznefet, and it was still placed to put the tefillin directly on his skin, then obviously, if you were just wearing the mitznefet, you'd have a place. Next one, Hakol chayvim b'tkiyat shofar. Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim. Again, pshita, and again, Kohanim, itzri chalei. Why? Salkadat hachamina ho'il uchtib yom tru'a yelechem. Yom tru'a yelechem means, right, this is about Rosh Hashanah, you have to blow the shofar. But what does it sound like? One day a year you blow the shofar. Now the Kohanim blow it many days a year. How do we know this? So, man deleite ele b'tkiyat dechad yom achayav. One who only has tkiya one day a year is who the pasuk is referring to. Vahane koanim, again, this is what you might have thought creatively. Again, I don't know that any of you would have come up with these conclusions, but vahane koanim ho'il v'itnu b'tkiya kule shata, since they blow the shofar all year long, dichtiv, how do we know this? Utkatem b'chatzotzrot al olotechem. One of the times you blew the chatzotzrot, notice chatzotzrot, not shofar, okay, but one of the times you blow the chatzotzrot would be when you brought korbanot olah. Ah, so the kohanim are blowing them all year round. And therefore, ema lo lichayvu. Therefore, you might have thought you're not chayav. Now the Gemara asks the question, midame, hatam chatzotzrot, hacha shofar. What does one have to do with the other? Those are two different things. So what are the answer? It's true. No, you still need it. Why? Salkadat hachamina ho'il utnan shaveh ha'yovel l'rosh ha'shana l'tkiyahu l'brachot. Since Yovel, okay, on the Yovel year, Yom Kippur, they would blow the shofar, do this whole ceremony. So they say the Yovel, the Shaveh HaYovel, the Yom Kippur on the Yovel year is like Rosh Hashanah. For what purposes? For tkiah, for blowing the shofar. Meaning the shofar that you use for that is the same. All the details of shofar that came up in Rosh Hashanah, of which shofar you could use, is the same for the Yovel also. Uli brachot, and also for the brachot, zich machliot, zichronot, and shofarot, you would also say that year on Yom Kippur. I don't know if you knew that. De ite b'mitzvat Yovel, ite b'mitzvat Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, what might you say? Since we make this comparison of what's true for Rosh Hashanah is true for the Yom Kippur on the Yovel year, maybe we would say whoever Yovel is relevant to, it's relevant to Rosh Hashanah, to the shofar. We're now kind of reversing the way of learning it. And what does that have to do with Kohanim? And to leite b'mitzvah Yovel, leite b'mitzvah Rosh Hashanah. Maybe if you don't have to keep Yovel, then you also don't have to keep Rosh Hashanah. Now what does that have to do with Kohanim? Hane Kohanim ho'il v'litnu b'mitzvot to Yovel. There's certain mitzvot that the Kohanim certain mitzvot of Yovel don't relate to the Kohen. What are they? Titznan, Kohanim v'leviyim mochrim le'olam. They can sell their property anytime they want. Okay, whereas a regular Yisrael, if he sells his property in the Yovel year, it's not considered a sale. You're not allowed to sell property in the Yovel year. Everything goes back to its original owners. And if you were to try to sell your property during that year, it would be an irrelevant sale. V'goalin la'olam. There's a whole thing about a stach huzav. We've come across this before. If you sell certain type of properties, you have a certain time frame in which you can buy it back. The assumption is you ran out of money and you need to sell your property, but we give you a way to buy it back. But it's capped at a certain point, whereas a Kohen and a Levi can redeem it forever. So you might have thought because of that, so maybe you'd think, again, you'd have to go far to think this, but maybe you think, since the Yovel has the Tkiyat Shofar of Rosh Hashanah and it's all learned out from Rosh Hashanah, maybe we could learn back from Yovel to Rosh Hashanah. Whoever isn't part of Yovel like that isn't part of Rosh Hashanah. Kamash Malan. But it comes to teach you that, yes, they are part of it. Why? Not just because you would make this comparison, but even if you made this comparison, there's still certain things about Yovel that are relevant to Kohanim. Nihi delitnehu bashmatat karka. Even though they're not, in terms of the land, the stuff of Yovel doesn't apply to them. Bashmatat ksafim ubishiluach habadim miu itnehu. If they had, they lend someone money, the loan is canceled. And if they had avadim, the avadim get freed. So those parts do relate to the Kohen, and therefore they are part of the Yovel, and therefore they are part of Rosh Hashanah. And that's why it has to tell you, though, because you might have thought they'd be excluded. Okay, we'll continue more tomorrow.